And now, with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved, here is Dr. James Hauck.
Well, good evening, everyone. Good afternoon, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, reclaiming that which has always been in you. I really enjoy spending this time with you each and every Tuesday, and I have a special announcement regarding some upcoming programs and dates for you, but we'll get to that in a second. Now, for those of you who are new to the program, I would like to say that I'm a firm believer that all of us come into the world already equipped and graced with everything that we need in this life in terms of our giftedness, or let's say our skills, our talents, our strengths, our character traits, etc., etc. However, as we go along in life and due to some, let's say, you know, perhaps due to some unpleasant experiences, we may tend to hide our giftedness. We may tend to hide the very best things about ourselves. We may push those gifts and those skills way down so that others cannot see it. Or perhaps we were told that we would never amount to anything, or whatever voice we heard telling us that there's really nothing special to you. Well, at any rate, we do not realize our giftedness, and we go through life functioning from this place of being so wounded instead of a place of healing and wholeness and uniqueness, or what's often been coined as hachetas. It is thisness. It's that thing that just makes us different from one another, and yet we have so much in common. Thisness, hachetas, that uniqueness that only you bring into this world. And so there is so much more to us than what we have become so far. And this is what reclaiming authenticity is all about. Having the courage, finding that courage to reclaim that which has always been in you from the very beginning. These broadcasts focus primarily on the integration of spirituality and mental health within the context of our relationships, the relationships that we have with ourselves, the relationship that we have with others, and the relationship that we have with God or the divine. And as I said at the beginning, it is my great pleasure to be with you here this week. I am Dr. James Hauck, and if you would like more information about me or to leave me your comments about tonight's show, please visit www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And I'm also happy to report that these shows are now in podcast, and if you would like, you can also access them through the iTunes podcast as well and listen to them at your leisure if you miss any or all part of the show. And if you would like to be part of the show today, please call in. I do enjoy talking to you. That number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I will be taking your calls in the second half of the show today. And I encourage you to call into the show because I would really like to get your heart on today's subject. It's entitled A Rose by Any Other Name, or if you prefer, The Root, The Shoot, and The Fruit. So how is your heart today? I hope that wherever you are safe and your heart is at peace. Now, here's a special announcement that I mentioned at the very top of the hour. Beginning in August, which is next week already, if you can believe it, just coming into Saturday, that's August 1st. But beginning in August, this show will be moving to a new day and time. Starting August 7th, Reclaiming Authenticity will now be on Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time or noon Pacific Standard Time. Okay, so mark your calendars, write this down. Starting August 7th, the show will be moving to Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time or noon Pacific Standard Time. Now, in August, I will be featuring a very special broadcast. In fact, August 7th and 14th on After Death Communication. And on Friday the 21st and the 28th, I will be talking about near-death experiences. Now, these are two subjects that are very near and dear to my heart. It's something that I have encountered personally. I also have encountered them in counseling clients and teaching students, and from a pastoral perspective as well. People have shared with me the information that they have received from loved ones, or if they've had a near-death experience, and just the kind of transformation that that occurred, or had that effect, I should say, and occurred in a person's life. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with after-death communication, I'm not talking about we're going to break out the Ouija board and start contacting whoever. That's not what that means at all. But it's a phenomena where people have often, you know, following the death of their loved ones, the survivors would be visited by their loved ones at random. You know, they don't have to contact them. It's more of the deceased contacting us, so to speak. And this takes on the form of just many different ways, many different avenues. Some people report having, you know, their loved ones show up through very vivid dreams. Now, this is quite different than just dreaming about our loved ones, but this is a case in which our dreams just are so vivid, we know that our loved ones were speaking to us or gesturing to us in some way. Or there have been people who have reported having visions of their loved ones, where they were just doing something, maybe minding their own business, and their loved one appeared and just gave a quick wave or a gentle smile, and that was it. That was enough. And sometimes, even through animals showing up that are not indigenous to where you live, is often a sign that a loved one is close. Or even smelling a loved one's perfume or cologne, and as soon as you do, you feel their presence with you. Some people hear their loved ones calling out to them, and even sometimes there would be communication from a loved one through technology, such as through phones or clocks. And we even have incidences whereby pets have contacted their owners after their death. And so I will be sharing those stories. That's the first 2 weeks in August, the 7th and the 14th. And then, as I said, I'll be sharing stories. And I do invite you to mark your calendars in August. And if you've ever had an after-death communication or near-death experience, I encourage you to call in and share your story with us. Well, let's begin with our topic today. It's a topic of spiritual growth, but let's begin with a story. Once upon a time, a spiritual master was walking along with his student, just spending time, just enjoying one another's companies outside, and they were discussing spirituality. The young student was troubled, because as many students are from time to time, he was impatient with what he perceived was a lack of his spiritual progress. It just wasn't going fast enough. You know, in his mind, he believed he ought to be further along in his path and in seeking, you know, truth and understanding and growth and feeling closer to God and so forth. I mean, he studied hard. He did everything his teacher asked him to do, but he still felt that he should just be further along. Just in his mind, it just something wasn't happening. Well, at one point in their walk, The master and the student came to this beautiful garden of roses. The master smiled as he pointed out the numerous colors and fragrances of the roses, each in their various stages of development. Yet the student did not fully understand the master's point in this lesson, because, yes, you and I both know that every moment in our lives is a teachable moment for us, so we just need to pay attention. But anyway, the master saw that his student was not understanding this, you know, this object lesson. So he picked a rose that was just in the early stages of its bloom. He handed the rose to the student, and he asked him to open it. Well, the student looked curiously at the rose, but then proceeded to use his fingers to gently push the rose open. Now, to his surprise, the rose started to fall apart and didn't resemble any of the other beautiful roses in full bloom. In fact, when he was done, many petals had fallen to the ground, and the rose was just simply ruined. Well, the master gently smiled as he took the rose back from his student. And he told his student very gently that you cannot force roses to bloom, because they bloom in their own time. And someday, he too will bloom in God's time and in God's grace. And even though roses are still in their buds and they have yet to bloom, they're still roses, because they are connected to their roots, anchored firmly in the ground, receiving all their water and nourishment from the sun and soil. And of course, when roses have opened and are in their full bloom, the fragrance is enjoyed by all, because they have reached a point of maturity. Well, finally, the student understood the lesson. And he also understood that his role then was to continue in his integration of the knowledge that he was gaining and his personal experiences and be faithful to his studies. He also needed to discover his own giftedness, his own hechaitas, his uniqueness, his thisness. And he also needed to develop his skills. But more importantly, he was to stay anchored to his roots, to his faith, and his spiritual foundation. And by trusting in God's grace and over time, he too would blossom. He too would provide that sweet, sweet fragrance to others that really enhance relationships. Now, let's be honest with ourselves, okay? I mean, show of hands. How many of us often get caught up in the, I want to hurry up and bloom stage? And we tend to forget that even in a budding stage, we're still growing. And if we're faithful to our own integration of our own spiritual practices and experiences, along with our daily awareness of truth and God's grace, transformation is inevitable. And to be quite honest, I got caught up in this as well. Many times my teacher would just say, slow down. You know, I was like a sponge. I was soaking up everything I could get my hands on, everything I was reading. I wanted to know all there is to know about spirituality. The problem was, I was not taking the time to integrate that which I was learning. And I soon realized that this foundation I thought I was building was not as deep as I would have liked it. My spiritual roots were just not going down that far because of the integration. Well, I quickly learned to slow down and integration of what I was learning and what I was discovering about myself and who I am. And in my own giftedness, my own hechaitas, the spiritual growth started to occur. It was just my job to remain faithful. Keep being anchored. Keep integrating. Well, as a mental health therapist, I also see this kind of impatience in clients who want to just hurry up and get better and get through counseling. because after all, that's usually the first thing out of people's mouths is, hey, look, I just want to feel better. I don't have time to start digging into myself. I don't want to look at the past. I don't want to understand my wounds. I just don't want to do it. I just want to feel better. And I completely understand this. Psychological pain is no picnic. Emotional pain is no picnic. And if you want to throw on physical pain on top of that, and even spiritual pain, it's no wonder. People don't want to face these issues. But unless they do, unless they're able to work through their pain, their wounds, and they want to have a deeper relationship with God, the spirituality, the spiritual growth is going to be hindered by so many, many different things. In fact, it'll probably choke out the spiritual life if it's not tended to properly. But still, many times I just have to reassure them, you know, that their psychological and emotional and spiritual healing cannot be rushed, because it's more important for their healing to be complete. Still, some people believe that they're doing something wrong because they just don't see changes fast enough. And that's just simply not the case. You know, true, yeah, most of the time people want to feel better, yes, and as quickly as possible. But if truth be told, healing takes time. Transformation takes time. In fact, many times a person's spiritual growth occurs as they are engaged in this combination, what I like to call unlearning and relearning. And this is what I mean. Sometimes people need to unlearn the assumptions that they have about the world or how God should work for them. Sometimes people will need to unlearn habits or other behaviors that have led them down unhealthy mental, emotional, or even spiritual paths. Still, for some people, they will need to let go of the roles that they took on that have created certain dysfunctions in the family. And still, others will need to unlearn their sabotaging behaviors based on previous relationships that they have suffered. Yet, that's just one half. The other half is to learn or relearn healthy aspects to themselves, to relearn and reclaim those life-giving characteristics of themselves. And if there's only one thing, I hope there's more than that, but if there's only one thing that you take away from this program today, this is what I wish. The more faithful we are to life-giving spiritual integration, sooner or later, life-giving spiritual transformation will occur. The more we are faithful to life-giving spiritual integration, sooner or later, life-giving spiritual transformation will occur. And a key ingredient for any spiritual integration is the element of hope, H-O-P-E, hope, especially when it comes to trying to make sense of our lives in the world in which we live today. There's a great quote I read once by Thomas Merton that captures the essence of hope that is needed along a spiritual journey. Actually, it comes from one of his books that he wrote entitled Seize the Day. I love that title. So anyway, Thomas Merton writes, "I have no idea where I am going. I do not see the road ahead of me. I cannot know for certain where it will end, nor do I really know myself. And the fact that I think I am following your will does not mean that I am actually doing so. But I believe that the desire to please you does in fact please you. And I hope I have that desire in all that I am doing. I hope that I will never do anything apart from that desire. And I know that if I do this, you will lead me by the right road, though I may know nothing about that. Therefore, I will trust you always. Though I may seem to be lost and in the shadow of death, I will not fear, for you are always with me, and you will never leave me to face my perils alone. And that's, as I said before I read this, that's just a great way Merton just sums up why hope is so important. You know, and especially we don't know where we're going or where our spiritual journey is going to take us. It is a matter of faith, but that faith has to be anchored in a relationship with God or the divine, and the hope extends from that. Hope is a very, very powerful lesson, and so what Merton is saying here is that he doesn't need to see where his life will go, because in a sense that is not where his hope lies, but rather his hope lies squarely in the relationship that he has with God. I love that section when he says, "But I believe that the desire to please you does in fact please you. And I hope I have that desire in all that I am doing. I hope that I will never do anything apart from that desire." One of my favorite stories about hope and seeing the opportunity and the potential in people actually come from a story, which is a true story, about a young girl who had very, very bad eyesight. And she lived back in the day in which, well, if there was any kind of emotional or physical infirmity, you know, they shipped you off to an asylum. And she spent the better part of her days, in fact, all of her days, down in the basement where it was damp and it was dark. It just wasn't well lit. And she actually had to stay in, you know, kind of like a cage environment. And, you know, so she wouldn't run off, as, you know, they told her. But, you know, anyway, but over time, a nurse who was, you know, taking care of her took a real liking to her. And so this nurse would, you know, take her lunch down, you know, during lunchtime, would take it downstairs in the basement and just eat her lunch beside this young girl. And they formed a very wonderful friendship together. And guess what? This young girl thrived. Her eyesight was still poor, and of course, being in a darkened basement wasn't doing that any good. But, you know, she started to thrive, and then she eventually was allowed to come up out of the basement because she was doing much, much better, all based on this relationship with this one nurse. And over time, she started to excel in her studies, and she did so wonderful in her studies and in her integration that she eventually went on to graduate high school, and then she went on to college, and then she went on and just started to give back to others who might have some physical disability. And over time, yes, she was brought to, let's say, in the eyes of society, another hopeless case, but she established a relationship with this girl, and this girl also started to thrive, and this girl went on to do great and just wonderful things. And this is actually the backdrop, the historical story of Annie Sullivan and Helen Keller. We never know what's going to happen when we see the potential, the thisness, the hachayatas in another person. And this is the power of hope. This is the kind of life-giving aspect that hope can spark in another person. There is another saying out there, and if you're in the medical community, please back me up on this or correct me, but I don't know if you've ever heard the saying that we can live up to 30 days without food. We can live about 3 weeks without water. We can go about 3 minutes without oxygen, but we cannot live 3 seconds without hope. We just can't do it. Yeah, hope is that powerful. Hope is that, you know, that transformative power in us and through us. But the true lesson is for us, I think, we need to examine, what do we place our hope in? In whom do we place that hope? And if there's ever a group of people out there who exemplify hope on a daily basis, just a daily practical basis, it's people who farm. And think about it. Everything they do by faith, all in the hopes of to produce a crop. They get out there, they till the soil over and over and over again. They remove the rocks and other obstacles that would get in the way of having a healthy crop. Then, again, by faith, they plant seed. Seed that is very expensive. And then they cover it back up with the soil. And all of this is done by faith in the hopes that with the sun and water and, while we're at it, let's throw in a little bit of nature's fertilizer, the seed will produce wonderful crops. Everyone needs hope. It's just part of us, something ingrained in us from birth and truly how we see the world. But like I said, but what we hope in and in what we hope for can either bring us misery or it's going to bring us peace. I sit with many people who have been taught that material things will bring happiness and contentment. And now let's be clear that there's nothing wrong with material things. We all need food. We all need clothing. We all need shelter. We all want security. We want to have achievements. We want to set goals and so forth, on and on and on. But I sit down with a lot of people who, by all outward appearances, seem to have it all together. But inside, they're miserable. And it's true. You've heard the saying, too, that money doesn't necessarily buy you happiness, and it certainly doesn't quell the storms that rage within us. Which, ironically, brings us back to the analogy of roses. Have you ever watched a rose bush during a storm? You know, a powerful summer storm. The branches, you know, are just swaying back and forth by the wind, and the petals are being stripped away and just flying all over the place as they're pounded by the rain and just harsh winds. And as the storm continues, it doesn't look like the rose bush would survive that kind of so-called punishment. And after the storm has passed, you go out to look at a rose bush and it looks all pitiful and gnarly. And I mean, it just looks sad because there's really nothing left to it. However, beneath the surface, deep within the earth, that rosebush is alive and well because the roots are firmly anchored. Life is continuing. Even in the dead of winter, if we go out and we see rosebushes, or if you're driving through an orchard, those trees just kind of look all gnarly and just, you know, sad. But there's life going on underground. It doesn't matter how frozen the ground gets, life continues underneath. And it's in the timing. And by God's grace, we will see the shoots come up again. And in the spring, those shoots will bud, they will blossom, and they will bear its fruit and fragrance for everyone to enjoy. The life of any plant, the life of any flower, is in its root. The healthier the soil, the stronger the roots, the more life continues over and over and over again. Well, I don't know if you've ever had the pleasure of trying to tear out the roots of a rose bush. Good luck with that one. Those roots go down deep. They go down as far as 3 feet or more, and they spread out to about 3 feet all around. They just kind of take over, and this is why they can weather the most severe storms. I mean, then they'll come back next year, guaranteed, because they have strong roots. But I also see this in mental health, that whenever a person suffers from, say, a traumatic incident or a tremendous loss of some kind, they often sit and wonder, you know, will I ever be able to put these pieces back together? How do I start the healing process? Where do I start the healing process? What's my life going to look like in the end? And will I ever feel alive once again? Now, I don't get down on one knee and start singing a verse from Little Orphan Annie, you know, the sun will come out tomorrow. I do not do that. However, physical, psychological, and emotional and spiritual healing is not a pie-in-the-sky, Pollyanna way of looking at life. But instead, many people take great comfort in the fact that it's a promise that following every storm in our lives, we will find our life, we will find our healing, we will find our strength again, because our roots are anchored to the relationships, and our spiritual roots are anchored in relationships that are eternal, not temporal. Well, I would really love to hear from you, love to hear your heart on this matter. So again, if you would like to call in, the number is 800-628-6008. And as I said, I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. Be back in 1 minute. Welcome back. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you're listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Again, just a quick word about next week's show. It's a new day, new time, Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Standard Time. And yes, we will be in the month of August. Can you believe it already? And I will be devoting the entire month of August to the subjects of after-death communication and near-death experiences. And I'll just put this out there right now that I encourage you that if you've ever experienced either an after-death communication from a loved one or experienced near death, please call in. Share your story. I would really, really love to hear from you. I believe that we have a caller right now. Tony, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Ah, okay, great. Welcome. Where do you reside?
I'm currently living in California. I'm originally from New Mexico.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity. What do you have, a question or a comment?
Well, I just was calling to see if I could have a little mini soul reading.
Well, actually, I don't do that per se. If you want to contact me like after the show, I can give more time for that. But do you have your story that goes with that? Maybe I can, you know, see what's going on with you?
Well, just a lot of, you know, throughout my life, I've done a lot of spiritual work, you know, gotten into Reiki, done a lot of things teaching, you know, trying to get going into Reiki for others, and have been told that I have a natural healing ability, but never have really been able to get into anything like that per se. So now I'm at the point where I'm at a crossroads, I think. I'm a medical social worker, so now I'm doing that. And I'm at a crossroads feeling like that's not fulfilling anymore for me. So I just really don't know which way to go.
Well, certainly understandable, because I would say the fact that you're feeling I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I would say you might be feeling limited in what you do as the, you know, the medical social worker. That's this as well as I do. With social work, that's a very valuable field, but it also can be very limiting at times as to, you know, lending itself to having those kinds of spiritual discussions with others.
Yeah.
But again, if this desire to do more is growing in you, I'm a firm believer in that those desires come from somewhere. And so certainly asking the questions, discovering those things about you, as you said that you got involved in Reiki, and I'm sorry, what was the other thing?
Just mainly Reiki. And at that point I was told that I was a natural healer, that I didn't even need the training that I went through, that I was able to heal. I'm very empathetic. I kind of pick up on people's energy, but I'm not, I try to be attuned to it, but then I go in and out of it. Let's put it that way.
Mm. Okay.
I'm able
to
do it for a while, and then I'm not able to do it.
Okay. Yeah. Are there times in which, when you are in it or going into it, where it just flows effortlessly?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And then what is the result of, say that you're able to work with somebody and to provide that healing that they would need in the moment in which they are seeking your help or you know, talking to you about, you know, their wounds or something?
For me, it's very energizing. But, I mean, the thing that I've been told is that I don't explain things well enough, and I don't get down to, you know, like certain chakras, whether they're blocked or anything like that. Because the way I believe is that anytime that I do that with someone, that automatically puts a blockage and they start thinking about that in a different way. And I just believe, you know, the way I was doing it is I would do the Reiki and then have like a mini session with the person afterwards and ask them, you know, how they felt afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And kind of work through it that way.
Right. And do they, do they ever come back to you in like a few days or maybe a week later and just kind of check in and just say how things have been going for them?
No,
after the
really.
Session?
I mean, I started off with doing like a free session and then, you know, trying to build my clientele from that, and nothing really came of it. So then I just really just let it go and thought, well, maybe this isn't something I should be doing. I'll just stay with what I know well, my medical social work.
Well, I think, you know, it's very healthy to, let me back up a little bit. When Reiki was really starting to, you know, get its footing here in the United States, and a lot of people were going for the training and so forth, they were combining it with that which they were already doing. And a lot were in the medical field and helping relationships and mental health. And it just seemed to be a natural extension of what they were doing. Now, you know, certainly in the work you do with people, I know that, I'll put it this way. A lot of times we get caught up in the hope that, well, we just need to sit with somebody and work with them one time and they're good. You know, they'll be healed and everything. And a lot of times healing is very much a process for that person. And I know when a person receives a Reiki treatment or whenever I talk to Reiki or perform Reiki on people, I always tell them to, you know, when you go home, first of all, drink lots of water because that not only flushes out our system, but also helps in whatever's coming up energetically to be processed or to be flushed out. And to also keep a journal beside their bed. And or with them at all times, or to use a little microphone app on their phone and just record what's coming up for them, wherever they may be. You know, even if it just sounds like you're just talking gibberish, just get it out. Just talk it out. And also for them to pay attention to their dreams, because it's a different level when we're dreaming, in which, you know, the mind is processing, you know, and the body is processing. So, like, let's say a first session of Reiki might just kind of till the soil, more or less, to get things ready for a deeper healing, but it's still on a level of healing, you know, that's taking place. So, you know, but I would say, go ahead.
Am I not experienced enough to not be able to pick up on blockages? Or, I mean, I know I listen to your show a lot, and I know that when people call in, you know, you do mention, you know, oh, it's your right shoulder and, you know, that kind of thing. And I think, well, I can't do that. So I don't know. Is that something that comes with time, or?
It does. You know, the more that whatever we do, whether it be mental health or Reiki or any other kind of, you know, being in a helping relationship, we really hone our craft, and we really become, you know, more attuned to recognizing symptoms and so forth in helping people. But my feeling is to work with people in conjunction, because they, again, know themselves psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, physically better than I do. So I often check in with them and say, okay, what's coming up now? Do you feel like anything is shifting? It feels like something is blocking. Do you feel something is blocked in your stomach or in your lower back? Or something like that. So I'm very much, you know, working along with the patient or the client in order to help them, you know, achieve what it is, the results that they're looking for. And quite often, you know, following a Reiki treatment or even during a Reiki treatment, people might tear up and they get in touch with some deep-seated wounds or a loss that they have had yet to grieve. And even though it doesn't seem like anything else was going on, that in and of itself is a tremendous breakthrough. I mean, that's healing just to be able to, you know, just to be able to express our feelings and our emotions.
Yes, and when I've done it with family, I've seen that. I've seen a lot of, as an example, I have two nieces, and one of them is very blocked. She had a death, her boyfriend died, and she's taken it very hard, and she's literally has blocked herself. And I have another niece who is her sister, and she's very empathetic. And I was doing Reiki on her, and her sister felt her emotion and literally broke down. And that was very interesting and very compelling, because I wasn't expecting that to happen.
Right. Right, right. And again, I mean, what you're alluding to is, you know, we're there, we're part of it, but we're not really the doer. You know, we are more of the witness of what's going on, and you know, God, the spirit, spirituality is working through us as like a conduit and actually helping, you know, a person get in touch with those things. And I've had clients, you know, in mental health counseling, just, you know, they would just tear up in sessions, and they're like, why am I doing this now? I don't get it. Why am I so tearful? And I just, you know, gently remind them that the reason why these things are coming up now is because they're telling you it's time to heal. You know, these things are ready to be healed and processed and worked through and then released. And then any kind of follow-up, like, say, forgiveness or any other thing that would be required for more, like a more complete healing would take place.
Yeah. I mean, is this something that I should be doing? I mean, I leave it for a while and I always come back to it. And I don't know. I'm just really confused right now. Like I say, I'm at a crossroads. I'm older. I mean, I want to. I thought I wanted to stay in my job until I retired, but this year has been, you know, pretty hectic for all of us, and we're really having to look at things differently. And I like now, but I don't know how. And now I have this exam that I have to take for my license in order to keep my job, and I keep failing it. And I keep trying to analyze and say, well, why do you keep failing this test? It's very hard. I'm in California, and it's very hard. But I don't know. I've been taking this test for years now, and I keep failing it. And I'm just tired, I guess, is what it is.
Right, right. Yeah. I would, I can make this recommendation for you to become very purposeful in your, setting intentions and in your prayer life, just to put it out there to God and the universe that, show me somehow some way of, the direction I'm supposed to go with this. It just seems as though I can't pass the test. It's getting frustrating, but that's really not where my heart is, And I would, my bottom line is we should be doing things with our lives and in our lives and in our careers and jobs that pull out of us the very best of us.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And if we can't answer that question where we are, then we have some choices to make. But, because we're not going to be giving it our best and we're just not going to be, happy or satisfied. And until we find that thing in our lives that just really pulls out our giftedness in just very life-giving, powerful, healing ways, I would say more or less spinning our wheels until we find that.
Yeah, and I'm in a job now that's very draining. I mean, there's a lot of negative, low energy around me, and I did come to that conclusion where I realized that I talk myself out of it every day and, build up my energy and go in, and then by the time I leave, I'm drained because it's just such low energy where I'm at, and I know that that's not good for me, but in other words, I don't know if it's I have this mentality that I have to stay there until I retire because I have no income and, that kind of thing.
Right, right. Yeah, it just seems like you just need to look at this from just many different angles and, just ask to be shown what is the best in everything that you're looking at right now, like what would give you the most peace? What would give you the most, satisfaction and things like that? What is the most life-giving for you and for others? But it's hard to make that transition to, things that we've never done before, or we're not, we may not be comfortable in doing it like on a full-time basis because, right away our mind wants to ask the question, our mind wants to ask the question, well, how are you going to make money at that?
Right.
And so some people can, kind of straddle making a living, doing something, but then, other times they can do what they really enjoy doing and just, kind of having that steady income, but yet at the same time being in that other profession where, it's just very life-giving to them,
Yes.
So
yes.
There are practical aspects to this as well as spiritual. So, but I wish you well in your, search, but just keep asking those questions. And I would just say, trust your heart. You know your heart better than anybody, and you know what's going to give you life in the end.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Well, thank you so much for your
treatment.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah, sure. You
bless
take
you.
Care now. Be safe out there. All right. Well, thank you.
You too. Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Yep. Bye-bye. Okay. All right. Thank you, Tony, for that call. It's indeed a pleasure talking to you. Well, as I mentioned at the top of the hour, we're looking at spiritual growth in terms of rosebush, and just using that analogy, that powerful metaphor, I should say, that's actually a better word, in terms of the root, the shoot, and the fruit, or the fragrance of the rosebush, and just hearkening back to that story of the master and his young student where, again, a lot of us just, I should be further along in this. I should know better. I should be more advanced. I should be. And that's often comes from a place of, we start to compare ourselves with others. And like, I'm not as far along as that person, or I've been doing this a lot longer than that other person, or whatever our minds are telling us. And when we start to compare ourselves, that's it should be a big red flag for us to just say, okay, stop. Because spirituality has nothing to do with comparison. And it's not a race. It doesn't matter who gets there first, but it does matter just how deep your spiritual roots go and to what you are anchored to. Okay, so, you know, as in the story with the young student, you know, trying to force open a rosebud before its time just made a mess of things. And there's also other stories out there, say the butterfly or the being in the cocoon or the chrysalis is probably more accurate to say. And when the butterfly is emerging slowly and really struggling, breaking through the chrysalis, if we get in there and we start to interfere and we open up the hole, and you know, so it would be easier for the butterfly to emerge, we didn't do the butterfly any good. In fact, it's part of the struggle of trying to squeeze through that little hole in which fluid from the body of the caterpillar helps to develop wings. And so it can, you know, mature fully, and it can fly and you know, do everything that butterflies do. And so, you know, part of the time, the struggle is not a bad thing. You know, it is something about in our lives that we think if we're struggling, then we're doing something wrong. And that may not be the case. In fact, struggle often, you know, helps us sink our spiritual roots even deeper. You know, because as the storms are coming and we're being pummeled or whatever language you want to use, we just, you know, just have to anchor down further and hang on, because those storms will not last. And yes, you know, if you want to stay with the metaphor of roses and storms, yeah, the sun will come out another time. Things will dry up. Things will bloom again. And, you know, but the only reason that can occur is because there is life anchored in those roots. And even in the dead of winter, or even in the fall, when the trees are losing their leaves and the fruit trees have released all their fruit or they've been picked, that's when the pruning stage begins, actually, because as the temperatures go down, the life of the tree, the fruit tree or otherwise, or the plant, actually starts to shrink back into its trunk. Not the whole way, but, you know, it starts to shrink. And that's when those who tend fruit trees will go in and just start pruning their orchards, because they know that they're not, you know, cutting away the life. They're cutting away the deadened parts, and the pruning actually helps the tree bud and grow even more, produce even more fruit the next season. Because when it's time in the spring for, you know, the budding to begin, for lack of a better phrase, the life that has shrunk back into the tree just bursts forth with just new life and new power, and that life is needed to, again, produce those buds and to just, you know, give life to the branches that will eventually produce the fruit. So the pruning aspect in our lives is very important. We don't like it because, you know, we don't like things to be cut away from our lives. But when you think about it, those things that need to be cut away, well, they're dead anyway. You know, they have no life. They have no more use for us or to us. And so those things need to go. But yet we fight and we want to hang on to those things as if, you know, we can't give that up because it's still valuable to us, when it could actually be draining our spiritual life. And so that's just, you know, it's hard to find that understanding at times of, you know, what's going on. I just don't feel like I'm growing, or I don't feel like I'm going as far enough as I should be, or I should be further along. But that, for me, that's always a sign of, first of all, I don't listen to that voice. It's just like, okay, get out of my head. Because I just know that's an illusion. That's a lie. And then the next thing I do is I sink my roots even deeper in my relationship with God. because I know that's where my life is. That's what nourishes me. That's what gives me the strength. That's where all my gifts and graces and hachayatos, my uniqueness, comes from in the first place. I mean, it was God who gives us all those things before we come into the world. And as we come into the world, I imagine God saying to each and every one of us, okay, you have everything you need. Go and do. Go and be. And let you in on just a valuable, valuable lesson I learned, oftentimes the hard way, is that our gifts and graces and strengths and character traits and so forth aren't necessarily meant for us. I mean, we have these things, but they're meant for others, to serve others, to help others, to be a healing to them. So never give up on the ability of God's grace to work in and through your life. Even if you don't feel like you're making enough spiritual progress to suit you, remember the story of the master, the student, and the rose. And if we have strong spiritual roots that are anchored firmly in our relationship with God or the divine, you will see wonderful thisness or uniqueness emerge that will be a blessing and healing in all your relationships. I'm Dr. James Hauck, and it has been my great pleasure to spend this time with you. Please be safe when you go outside. We are still in COVID. And be well. And until next week, God bless.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding to buy a book by Dr. Hauck, it's all there. Just wander on over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio.